ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The head of the FBI is pushing Congress for a vote soon on reauthorizing FISA, the law that lets spy agencies listen in on communications of foreign nationals without obtaining a warrant. Here's ABC's Christiane Cordero.
Congressional leaders say they're hopeful they can pass a bill reauthorizing a U.S. spy program known as FISA after a late-night agreement. 19 Republicans previously voted to block the reauthorization of FISA, concerned it goes too far and can jeopardize the privacy of Americans. One change now being made, potentially reauthorizing FISA for 2 years instead of five.
After the expected House vote today, House Speaker Mike Johnson will head to Mar-a-Lago to hold what he says will be a news conference alongside former President Donald Trump. Vice President Kamala Harris is headed to Arizona following this week's state Supreme Court decision upholding an 1864 law that bans all abortions except to save the life of the mother. Nearly 400 severe storm reports this week from the south into the Great Lakes and Northeast. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A judge is denying a Waukesha area woman's request to be released from a mental health facility. Morgan Geiser was 12 when she and a friend stabbed another girl a decade ago. They said they thought they were appeasing a fictional character called Slender Man. The judge ruled yesterday that Geiser is still a threat to herself and others. Wisconsin has 3 years to meet the federal government's higher new standards for PFAS in drinking water. Advocates like Clean Water Action's Lynn Thorpe say policymakers are taking the PFAS problem seriously.
I will say that the process has moved relatively rapidly, and I think that's a reflection of the seriousness of the problem.
The legislature's Joint Finance Committee meets next week to consider Governor Evers' request for $125 million for PFAS cleanup. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For 1490 The Eagle WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. According to data from the city of La Crosse, the new EPA standards on PFAS would mean the city's municipal water would exceed the threshold of contamination by federal standards. In fact, of the country's thousands of water systems, it's estimated 6-10% could have PFAS levels above the new federal standards. The new standards don't apply to groundwater contamination, which affects places like the town of Campbell. However, Wisconsin has its own PFAS standard set by the DNR to help with identifying contamination. A Vernon County recount for a county board supervisor position is complete, with the same result as what was reported on election night. Nicholas Erlinson filed for a recount after the election night returns showed him losing the District 5 seat by one vote. He said there were mistakes in tallying and the number of votes in three precincts, including in Coon Valley. After the recount, Vernon County officials confirmed that Bruce Kilmer won the seat 176-175. For WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Bust in pencils.
We'll keep talking about it because it is an important thing happening in our world and in our culture, whether you're in education or in any field. It's part of your day-to-day right now. Like, hey, what's the role AI is going to play in this?
We give every assignment the kids turn in, we put it through AI detectors. There's no ability for a student to opt out of the surveillance.
Busted Pencils, weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The Brewers head to Baltimore. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers opened a weekend series against the Orioles at Camden Yards. Yesterday's game with the Reds got rained out in Cincinnati. Rescheduled as a doubleheader in August. NBA, the Bucks in Oklahoma City to take on the Thunder tonight. The Bucks coming off wins over the Celtics and Orlando Magic. NFL, the Packers on the tailgate tour headed to Brazil this fall to take on the Eagles for the opener. I asked Kenny Clark.
Do you know anybody that's been to Brazil?
I went there a couple years ago, actually.
You did?
Yeah, I was in Brazil. I was in Rio. And I had an amazing time, man. There's so many Packer fans out there, so many football fans out there. I went during the Super Bowl and watched the Super Bowl at a bar, and the energy there was amazing. I can only imagine, you know, what the experience we're going to have when we out there actually playing a football game in Brazil. The fans are going to be amazing.
So LaFleur's coming to you for tips on how to get around Brazil.
yeah. Glad to come to me for the tips.
That's Packers defensive lineman Kenny Clark. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Mostly sunny and still a little breezy today. We'll get to 59 for a high this afternoon. The wind northwest at 15 to 25, gusting to 30. Tonight, clear 36. Tomorrow, sunshine 72. By Sunday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 75. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 49.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Talk that matters to you and fits your lifestyle.
Tune out all the yelling and screaming.
Come soaring with Eagle 1490.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, Iran is doing a little more than saber rattling. It has talked about an attack, an imminent Iranian strike on Israel. Now, imminent, Sandy, when you use that verbiage, and I think the United States is saying sometime in the next 2 days that Iran has, and I guess everything that they've been able to deduce, that Iran is going to strike Israel. And, Sandy, that's inconceivable.
Well, Israel sort of bought this, right? I mean, they attacked the Iranian embassy in Syria, which is like attacking
their land.
Well, right? under the principle of international law, an embassy is an extension of the land of the country. So attacking the embassy is like attacking Iran. And, you know, it's pretty much never done. You know, the embassies don't get attacked even in circumstances of head-on war. And so, you know, and in fact, the United States, I think it was this morning, at least I heard this morning's news, that the United States was essentially admonishing Israel and indicating that Israel failed to give the United States advance notice of its intention to carry out the strike on the embassy. And clearly the United States was distancing itself from Israel with respect to that, announcing to the world that we, the United States, had nothing to do with it. And I think they're setting the stage for the fact that if Iran does take action against Israel, that the United States will not reciprocate by taking action against Iran, that essentially this is Israel's problem. Now, you know, so Israel has kind of bought this problem. You know, now the fact is they did it. Israel says they did it because they were striking at leaders of Hezbollah, and that embassy was a place where Hezbollah would have meetings. But still, it's a problem.
So this is where they talk about measurable, right? Who determines what's measurable? Let's say Iran, because clearly if Iran strikes Israel. Israel's not going to sit still. They're going to respond. Tit comes to tat.
Well, most of the conjecture I've heard was that Iran would typically use a proxy to carry out its conduct. So the likelihood is that Hezbollah, supported by Iran, will carry out an attack on Israel, and Hezbollah attacks on Israel are not uncommon. So I think we have to wait and see how this plays out. But Iran has been, in spite of the fact that we talk about it as being this kind of wild-eyed revolutionary and fomenter of problems, is relatively conservative about what it does in its own name, and is relatively conservative in terms of how it conducts its foreign affairs. So I'm kind of going to be patient on this one. I think what we'll see is a conduct by Hezbollah, which will be indirectly supported by Iran, which will be aimed at Israel.
Let me ask you then, Sandy, because this is the kind of thing that our government has been warning about since the beginning of this, the escalation, right? They've been doing everything within their power to try to tone all of this down because they knew in the end this could lead us into a situation that the world doesn't want to see. They don't want to see the United States at war with Iran, especially now that Iran has a partner in China and in Russia. And so these are delicate type times. Is that right? And as you stated, the United States believes that this thing should have never occurred without a conversation with the United States.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think what the United States has done is distanced itself from the Israeli attack in Syria on the Iranian embassy, and is putting itself in the position where it can stand clear of the fallout from this. And I think that's probably a wise course of action, because I'm confident they didn't say that we would have counseled against it. They just said, you didn't talk to us in advance, and you put us in jeopardy as the result of that. But I think it's pretty clear that this is setting the stage for America to take a much more hands-off position with respect to at least this next act of reprisal.
So because you're an ally doesn't mean that we as an ally to other nations, that they can do unilaterally whatever it is they want to do, and we're going to back them.
Right. And you know, that's part of the debate about the support of Israel in Congress, and this question of whether people are a pro or anti-Israel because of the fact that they might be making constructive criticism of how Israel is carrying out this war, relates to this very issue. Some would say that the United States in backing Israel is obligated to back Israel no matter what Israel does with respect to defending itself, because everything it does in defense of itself is supportable. And others are now beginning to question that and saying, well, there are some kinds of conduct that Israel might take in defense of itself that we need to reconsider.
You know, Sandy, there's never been, I guess, a time in my lifetime that there weren't, you know, wars going on all over the world. Somebody's always at war, right? I mean,
well, actually, now that is kind of true, and we've had small skirmishes in South America. But during the Cold War, there actually were a remarkably small number of actual hot conflicts. The detente that was the Cold War and the lines that were drawn and the extent to which they were honored by both sides in the Cold War meant that, what did we have? We had Korea, we had Vietnam,
Philippines.
We had some problems in the Philippines that was more revolution than not, but very little in the way of any kind of hot war conflicts. And it wasn't until the Soviet Union fell apart in 91 that the Balkans became a hot war after that, and then the whole Mideast.
So do you think the rationale back then, we were still close enough to, you know, the weapons that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that people knew the impact There were people are still alive who witnessed the impact of that and never wanted to ever see that again. And now we're so far removed from that, there aren't a whole lot of people left.
Well, I think that what happened then was that the world was essentially divided into two powers, two empires, the Soviet Empire and the American Empire. And the empires had no real interest in clashing with one another. And so that's what the détente was, essentially the peace of the Cold War, because the empires understood that. After the collapse of the Soviet Empire, the American hegemony was what was left, and the rest of the world sort of fragmented into all its various pieces. And it's when the world is in a bunch of pieces that we seem to find ways to fight with one another. The Balkans was the first, and that was, of course, everyone talks about being Balkanized, meaning to be cut into fragments and small pieces, because the Balkan republics, you know, were temporarily at peace when they were Yugoslavia, but historically the Balkans have been at one another's throats forever, and they went back to being at one another's throats with the collapse of the Yugoslavia.
You know, Sandy, maybe you and I and our generation, you know, once we're gone, maybe people won't spend time as much talking about these things that you and I talk about, especially globally, and the fact that how easily people can be, these major nations can be drawn into these kind of conflicts, because for the most part, the American people don't sweat these kinds of things. You know, it's, I don't think there are many Americans who are concerned or worried about whether or not Iran strikes Israel. It doesn't impact their daily lives, but...
Well, I think what happens is we deal with it in sort of a blood sport kind of a notion, but the sport being the operative term there. We've got the Atlantic and the Pacific that protect us, insulate us from the likelihood that it would ever happen on our soil. And so every time we ever get involved in one of these military conflicts, it's by our own choice, and we decide to send troops someplace. We tend to do it under the rubric that we're preserving the freedom of Americans, but that isn't really the circumstance that we're involved with. It's we make a decision that we decide we want to be involved in some place. So, you know, we were involved in Afghanistan. We started out with a significant reason, 9/11, but then it got prolonged into nation building and a failed nation building. We got involved in Iraq for the very purpose of nation building. That collapse didn't work, but we were there many years. But we weren't defending America's freedom in either circumstance.
Yeah. You know, Jess, Sandy, we, you know, I forgot what general we've sent to Israel to have conversation and dialogue about what Israel should be expecting from Iran. I guess, you know, as you stated, proxy from Iran, but whatever it is, I don't know how you stop it now. Something's going to take place. There's going to lead to something else. And I don't know how you put that genie back in the bottle.
Well, I don't know.
We hope that it doesn't happen.
Yeah,
but
the bottle's been out. The cork has been out of the Mideast bottle for quite a while. So my hope is that it's temperate.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
Eagle 1490 AM.
Most of us can agree the decision to have an abortion should be between a person and their doctor. Politicians should have no say at all. Thankfully, Senator Tammy Baldwin is standing up for our rights and working to keep politicians out of our medical decisions. After Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights was overturned. Tammy Baldwin introduced the Women's Health Protection Act, which would ensure access to abortion everywhere in the United States, including here in Wisconsin. The bill would end extreme abortion bans that have no exceptions for rape, incest, or the life of the mother, and threaten doctors with criminal charges for providing abortion care. Senator Baldwin also introduced legislation that would protect the right to travel across state lines for reproductive health care and safeguard access to contraception. Call Senator Tammy Baldwin at 202-224-5653. Tell her thank you for fighting back against extreme abortion bans. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
It was a teenage wedding and the old folks wished them well. You could see that Pierre did truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur...
I can see John Travolta.
Doing the twist.
Doing the twist.
Yeah. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Sandy, let's...
I think that was the music in Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction. 844-967-2789 is the number. You know, Sandy, we've been talking about some heavy subjects this morning because they are worthy. Each one of the subjects that we are talking about, I think, are worthy of us having those discussions. Let's go to David from Mequon. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. Just for the record, I'm just giving you guys a heads up. Iran is going to be attacking within the next 48 hours. It's going to happen.
You know that? You've got inside information?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, I mean, I think what you've just reported is exactly what the American intelligence reported as well, that it should be expected within the next 2 days. Yeah.
Israeli intelligence, they have the gentleman that was on your show about a month after the initial attack in Israel on October 7th. If you go back to November 7th on your show, that was my wife's cousin that you had in the radio. And he does have connections with higher officials than you realize.
David.
Let me finish what I'm saying, Earl, please. So at the end of the day, and I sent you a link as well, Earl.
You sent me many links, Dave.
Of March, yes, where the Biden administration actually waived any, allowed Iran to get access to $10 billion of escrow money. So why did he do that? I have no idea why.
It was their money.
But we essentially are pitting.
It was their money, David.
Well, actually, I think it never came out of escrow. I think he took the action, and I think it never came out of the escrow. Are you sure it came out of escrow and that they actually got the money?
Yes, yes. There was an article I sent. It was from March 14th, and it showed that that was allowed, that Biden waived all that.
Hey,
and
David,
the problem is it
was their money.
Really?
Yes.
Their money, so they get a right to use that money towards destroying another country with it?
Well, I'm not arguing that point. You asked me why they were allowed and Joe Biden would give them the money. It's their money. It's the same argument that people said that Barack Obama gave Iran money. It was their money that we had been holding for decades.
And so my question to you, Israel, do you know how asinine that sounds coming from you?
Dave, let's put some things in perspective. You're being disrespectful, and I disagree with things that you say, and you have not heard me say things to you in that manner, and I'm not going to tolerate it from you here or anywhere else. We can have a discussion based on principles, but we're not going to have discussions based on you or anybody else You have a right to your opinion, but you don't have a right to be disrespectful. Now.
So at the end of the day, I guess we do differ, and you support countries that are willing to absolutely wipe other countries off the planet.
That's a ridiculous, it's a ridiculous statement. You have not heard that come from my lips. And as I stated, what is fact? The fact of the matter is the dollars that Iran received from Barack Obama and the dollars that they received from President Biden were their dollars that we've been holding.
Well, and let's, you know, I understand the rhetoric that has been used by Khomeini and others in Iran has been very inflammatory with respect to Israel. But their conduct, however, has been far more restrained. Their conduct has been restricted, I think, to Hezbollah conduct. Hezbollah has been definitely a problem for Israel on occasion. And however, I'm not sure it's been as much of a problem as Hamas. And I'm not sure that either one of them has the wherewithal or has demonstrated a likelihood that they intend a frontal assault on Israel to eliminate it. I understand the rhetoric that has occurred in the past, but I'm not sure that the conduct belies that rhetoric.
Well, so Sandy, I think to say that President Biden and the whole President Biden accountable, the President of the United States, for doing something that is unjust is what I'm challenging.
Well, I think that the situation in the Middle East is hot and getting hotter. And the question really is, what is the appropriate situation? How does peace get accomplished in the Middle East? And I think that there was a movement in the direction of peace with the recognition of Israel by a number of countries. I think that actually the situation between Iran and Israel was softening materially in the last 3 years, and it was being done, brokered to some extent by Saudi Arabia. And so I'm just not sure that falling back on the Khomeini rhetoric that was so inflammatory at this point in time is moving the ball forward in any regard. And so, you know, I think the situation is what it is. And I'm not sure that Israel's attack on the embassy was something that they would do again. Maybe it is. But I'm not sure that the success they achieved in terms of who it was that was killed in that embassy attack is going to be worth the measure.
Am I still on?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize. So just for the record, Sandy, Iran is using Hamas as a proxy war. They have been helping them. They've been working over in Syria. That's why there was an attack in Syria. And consequently, the people that were killed there, some of those were the leaders that actually helped coordinate the attack on October 7th. So I'm not sure how you're not correlating the two with Iran and Hamas, but it's a little surprising to me.
No, I think that the extent to which, I think that it's been clear that Hamas has been obtaining weapons. I think that the flow of weapons to them was coming through Qatar and other countries as well. I just think that you have to measure results and risks and the risk benefit ratio associated with the attack on the embassy might well not be a good one.
So Sandy, I want to delve a little deeper into that on the other side. 844-967-2789 is the number.
On Matt Nair on air, we recombobulate with Dan Schaefer at 10:33 in the 11 o'clock hour. All thanks entertainment with Nightlights Pete Schwabba. Don't miss it.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin Republican Congressman Scott Fitzgerald is back from a trip to Israel, where he urged Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to give a speech to Congress. Meanwhile, Mark Pocan and 55 other Democrats are urging President Biden to withhold weapons transfers to Israel. Wisconsin teachers are leaving the profession, and Wisconsin at an alarming rate, according to a new Department of Public Instruction report that says 4 of every 10 new teachers are gone after 6 years. Teacher pay in real dollars in Wisconsin has dropped 20% in 12 years.
Many teachers have taken on second jobs, like driving for Uber or working in restaurants.
WEAC Teachers Union President Peggy Wirtz Olson also points to heavy workloads and hostile political rhetoric. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For 1490 The Eagle WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Two state legislators, including one that is a candidate for Congress, will be in Muscadet on April 23rd to discuss a bill that will try to fund higher education in Wisconsin. State Senator Kelda Royce of Madison and Assembly Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point, who is running for the House in District 3, will talk about recent campus closures, including at UW-Platteville in Richland Center, mass layoffs at UW-Oshkosh and UW-Platteville, and the decline in funding for universities and technical colleges. The forum is free to attend. The state DPI released a report that shows 40% of new teachers in Wisconsin are leaving the field or the state within their first 6 years. DPI officials said the report shows that the education workforce is in crisis, with almost a third of people who are issued teaching licenses in the state not taking a position in Wisconsin. According to the report, teaching pay, when adjusted for inflation, has fallen about 19% since 2010. For WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. There's a serious buzz growing around Gladiator 2. Director Ridley Scott excited theater owners, giving them a peek in Las Vegas at Caesar's Palace during CinemaCon. Russell Crowe won a Best Actor Oscar in the first film, but his character was killed off. Stepping into the role is Paul Mescal. The film also stars Denzel Washington, Pedro Pascal, and Connie Nielsen. Gladiator 2 is expected to hit theaters on November 22nd of this year. Speaking of Ridley Scott, despite his age of 86, his directorial dance card is full. Scott also announced at CinemaCon that he will direct a Bee Gees biopic. In addition to Gladiator 2, he directed last year's Napoleon. Collider.com reports that Barry Gibb, the only living brother of the Bee Gees, will executive produce the film, which is currently in the development stage. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Mostly sunny and still a little breezy today. We'll get to 59 for a high this afternoon. The wind northwest at 15 to 25, gusting to 30. Tonight, clear 36. Tomorrow, sunshine 72. By Sunday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 75. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 49.
Matt and Air on Air.
So we're going to talk monarch butterflies and what we can do to help their habitat, because that's one of the biggest reasons why we're seeing our monarch population decrease. As Greg said, we know how much I loved Winged Thingas.
Winged Thingas!
That's the name of our band. Calvin, me, Jane, Winged Thingas.
The Winged Thingas.
Matt and Air on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. On air,
1490 AM.
Online,
lacrosseeagle.com.
And on the Civic Media app, this is Eagle 1490.
I'm telling you now,
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. And I'm telling you now.
Yeah.
That those were very simplistic kinds
I'm
of.
I'm telling you now. So just to straighten out something I said in response to Dave, I looked it up. The $10 billion has been released out of escrow. And it has gone to Iran, supposedly to be held in euros and to be used for restricted purposes. But I know that people in Dave's shoes who would argue that money's money and that the more money that Iran has to use for things that it has to use money for, the more money it has to use for things like supporting Hezbollah and Hamas. And I don't disagree with that. But I do question in terms of Israeli policy, and what I was trying to question was the cost-benefit ratio analysis, the risk-benefit ratio analysis that Israel must have conducted before it attacked an embassy, because embassies have been asylum for a long, long period of time. And as notorious as the people might be who are in asylum in embassies, it's very, very rare in world history for embassies to be attacked.
So let me ask you something.
So I think that's really the circumstance now that makes this a bit more dire.
So let me to follow along that train of thought. So if Hezbollah is in an embassy anywhere else in the world, that means Israel reserves the rights to attack.
Well, I don't.
The embassy.
I mean, maybe I'm not. I'm not speaking for Dave.
No, I know you're not. But I'm saying from the perspective of what Dave is saying.
Yes, that's the issue is, you know, is it proper to attack someone who's held in great disrepute or is viewed as a war criminal? Is it proper to attack an embassy in order to obtain access to that person? And
the answer to that is no.
Typically, under international law, that has not been carried out because that would be the same as attacking them on the soil of Iran. Now, maybe Israel would have been willing to carry out such an attack into Iran, but they haven't done that.
You know, saying and then to disavow what comes after the attack. You know, they were there, so that gave us the right to do it. And so Iran is saying, hey, man, you attacked us.
Well, like I said, war is a whole process of risk-benefit analysis. I'm not a war tactician. I didn't go to war college. I can't allege that I'm an expert on it. But
right.
My amateur estimation is that this was probably a miscalculation in terms of risk-benefit.
All right, let's do this. Unprecedented and stunning number of Trump administration alums oppose his reelection. So, Sandy, we've talked about Trump before. A minimum of 16 Trump administration veterans have sharply criticized the ex-president with terms such as threat to democracy, erratic, delusional, and narcissistic. And they have banded together to send a harrowing statement that the American people should be leery of putting this man back into the White House. And I would say, Sandy, that many of these people that we are talking about were his close allies while he was in the White House. Trusted, right?
Yeah.
These are the people who he sat down and supped with. And when there were things to be discussed, serious decisions to be made, these are his intelligentsia. These aren't the people who were, you know, the waiters and the busboys.
No, these are people who were there to listen to his more innermost thoughts. These are people who are there to watch his conduct and see how it is that he makes decisions, how it is he behaves generally, what his thought processes might seem to be, what his values might seem to be with respect to public policy. I mean, regardless of personal values, there are public policy values to be measured. And these are the things that these people are warning us about. And it strikes me that it would be prudent for us to, in doing our due diligence for who we're going to vote for, to listen to the people who might know him best. And it seems like a substantial number of people who knew him best are warning us in extreme ways, you know, trying to get our attention, trying to tell us that this is a serious problem. And I'm surprised that more people aren't listening.
So Sarah Matthews was working in the White House on January 6, 2021, when a mob of former President Donald Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to stop the certification of President Joe Biden's victory. She saw how Trump's staff tried to get him to condemn the violence for hours without success. In my eyes, it was a complete dereliction of duty that he did not uphold his oath of office, Matthews told the USA Today. I lost all faith in him that day. Matthews resigned from her job as deputy press secretary. In the wake of the January 6th, she views Trump as a threat to democracy who tried to steal the 2020 election and would do it again. This was a deputy press secretary, Sandy. Somebody who followed the president everywhere and was privy to all sorts of information.
Well, there are people who were his chief of staff there. You know, the list of people who are concerned isn't just deputy press secretaries.
It's Mike Pence, vice president.
It's the vice president it's people who were chief of staff. It's people who served in all different roles who saw him from all different perspectives. We should just listen. We should gather this evidence, and we should definitely take it into account.
Sandy, more and more and more, Mike Pence, Mike Esper, John Bolton, national security officials, like you said, these aren't, bumps on the logs.
Right.
And what does it take, Sandy, for a person who was there with a president of the United States for 4 years and, who day in, day out, for 4 years, helped shape the policy of the United States and the future of our country, and that's a sacred trust. Is it safe to say that? I mean, anybody who's that close, those are sacred trusts. Nikki Haley and others, for them to now come out and make these and give a warning, Sandy, is what they're doing. They're giving a warning.
Yeah, they're trying to send up a flare, and they're trying every which way to do it, doing it singularly, doing it in groups. I mean, I think they're seriously worried about it. They're running ads, trying to get our attention and tell us what it is that we need to know as we do our due diligence to figure out who we're going to vote for. And the question is, are we going to be smart about our due diligence? Are we going to have our eyes wide open? Or not. And that's the worrisome thing.
John Bolton, a stalwart of Republican administrations for decades, said the long list of Trump's critics from within the White House shows that questions about him go well beyond simple policy disagreements. The stunning thing about the number of senior Trump administration officials who campaigned against him, I think, proves that it really is Trump's flawed character, lack of knowledge, lack of philosophy, lack of fitness that has them concerned, Bolton said. And I'm not a guy who ever looked at John Bolton as a stand-up guy.
Okay. Well, I don't know about stand-up, but I never agreed with his hawkish policies. I think that he has the better interest of the country in mind. I think he did with his policies. I just didn't agree with them. But I think the real problem with Donald Trump is what he put his finger on, which is there's no policy. There's no there. There's no policy there other than what it takes to get Donald Trump elected president and to put himself into a position of power.
So let's talk about that verbiage policy, that word policy, because I think when people, support and elect and vote for people, they do it because they like the person. They're charismatic. And they don't know much about the policy aspect of it. Why is that the thing that is so important, Sandy?
Well, I think that was a turning point that essentially in the John Kennedy campaign. I think that presidential elections didn't tend to be so much about charisma, particularly when there wasn't TV to convey the charisma. And there was basically news media print to carry the information about a candidate. And that that sort of insulated the person from being tested for charisma. But ever since John Kennedy, it's frequently been a charismatic race. Who do the people like the most? Who is it that gets them most excited? And unfortunately, politicians have found it easier and easier to get elected by ducking from discussions of policy, making the policy discussions as vague as possible so that they can ride the crest of just a couple of issues and charisma. And I think the American public would be far better suited if we spent much more time testing the policy of our, and, you know, the debates that are had. You'd think those debates would be all about policy, but they aren't. You know, they're soundbite arguments, and they aren't policy discussions. And so Donald Trump has been able to get away with being this powerful political figure without ever enunciating a personal policy about just about anything. You know, and, you know, he announced that he would appoint conservative judges, so, and he did that. But he has never enunciated what his policies are. He talks about solving things like the Ukraine war in one day, but he doesn't explain how he's going to do it or what his underlying policy would be. He promised during the 2020 election that he would make health care better than Obamacare. There was never a program, never an idea, never a policy, just a statement. That's the problem. We need to get away from outcome statements and get back to what it is that what policies we are going to implement and where they're going
to
take us.
Well, you know, I think, Sandy, clearly the media understands talking about policy may be boring to the American people. It may be, you know, not as juicy as, there we go with that word again.
Yeah.
As you know, the tabloid kinds of discussions. And I really do honestly believe, Sandy, and I hope people don't get angry with me, that, you know, back in the 1980s, I remember Look magazine and Time magazine talking about the dumbing down of the American people. Do you remember that conversation that was being had?
Oh, yeah, and I think it was actually a strategy that I remember because I was on the fringe of politics, but the advisors to politicians always talked about dumbing down, okay, making things simple, making the conversation simple, making it something that could be remembered on an elevator and repeated. It was all about the process. It was all about dumbing things down to make them simple and to evoke emotion rather than thought. And that's, people have become very good at that in politics. And Donald Trump, untrained in politics, became very good at it because that's what branding is all about. Branding is all about evoking an emotion with something, okay? So, you know, I would agree with Donald Trump that he's been very good at branding. Branding is not something that involves policy.
844-967-2789 is the number. Sandy, we're going to talk a little bit about the United States Supreme Court, and who are there any guardrails for the United States Supreme Court? 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. That means Friday is my co-host Sandy Williams and you.
And I will be sure I'm in love with you now.
Listening to the Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt Nair on Air.
A fourth-generation family-owned business is running strong thanks in part to Wisconsin cheese. Dufek Wood Products calls Denmark home and has been based in Northeast Wisconsin for close to 120 years. It's best known for manufacturing boxes, which are food-safe to age and ship wheels of cheese and can be reused. But another Dufek Wood product is getting attention thanks to the Guinness Book of World Records. Do you think it's the family
family's wine boxes, organic garden mulch, or charcuterie boards? The answer coming up. Winter logging for summer building supplies is how the Dufix started. Manufacturing shifted by 1912 to other wood products, especially those cheese boxes. So did you guess which wood product is getting attention from the Guinness Book of World Records? It's the Dufix charcuterie boards, with one recently named the largest ever, holding more than 760 pounds of gourmet cheese. That's one huge slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Sixty-five. All right. Welcome back. Not the age. Not our age.
No.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, I love going back to the old songs, you know, when you and I were both young, and brings back memories, right?
Yeah. It's interesting. It's sort of like olfactory memories. You know, you never forget a smell, you know,
and
music has the same effect, you know, sort of takes you back nostalgically in a way that's very visceral.
Yeah. You see, I know the lyrics to many of those things. Let's do this, Sandy. The Supreme Court.
The Supremes. Here we are.
And I always thought, you know, three branches of government: judicial, presidential, and
the elected.
So the Supreme Court has a powerful role in the forming of our government, and it's not by accident that they're held in such a high position in the interconnectedness of our government. Sandy, how is it possible that the Supreme Court judges, some of them, have gotten caught up in things that I think really are ridiculous, benefiting from things that, you know?
Well, it's a little bit maybe like when Clinton finally explained himself and he said, it's because I can.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what it is. I think human beings tend to test the edge of the envelope. And if the envelope doesn't have an edge or the edge is overbroad, they'll go too far. And the Supreme Court necessarily needs to be not subjugated to Congress, okay? It needs to be separate from, it needs to be have an equal footing with Congress, because it's going to be testing the laws of Congress and deciding whether they're constitutional or not, and rejecting some and accepting others. And, you know, that's been an important aspect of our governmental system, is the ability to operate under the rule of law as interpreted not by the legislators, but by a court who are going to have a longer view of what the law is and should be and will measure it against the Constitution. So it's a delicate balance. But it is true that Supreme Court justices can be impeached by Congress, if they commit high crimes or misdemeanors and meet the standard for impeachment. There has been one that's been impeached, I think, in the past that involved bribery. But that impeachment process needs to be carefully utilized. It can't be utilized on a regular basis, because at that point, Congress would be exercising a power that would put the Supreme Court under its thumb. And we can't have that. We were all worried about that. Netanyahu was in Israel was trying to change their balance of power by making the Supreme Court decision subject to being overturned by their legislature. That's a very troublesome issue. That really puts the Supreme Court under the legislature instead of equal to it. And in our case, in our country, we don't want to do that. But we do have to find a way to make sure that our Supreme Court justices operate ethically.
You know, Cindy, I don't know if historically the kinds of things that have been going on with the United States Supreme Court, some members of the United States Supreme Court, namely Clarence Thomas and probably others, were so prominent, or if they are the ones who have done this, or maybe the media wasn't, you know, inclined to follow other Supreme Court justices over the decades and centuries as they are now. So I don't know if this is new or if it's pervasive, but certainly, Sandy, there should be some oversight that Supreme Court justices don't, you know, take perks. And so they're taking perks for a reason. Somebody's giving you perks because they're expecting something from you. And I think if we don't have something in place to challenge that, you know, it's easy for people to do what Clarence Thomas has done, which threatens, I think, the belief in the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking that, you know, Justice Antonin Scalia died at a fancy hunt club in Texas where he was off with a bunch of wealthy people. That should have opened people's eyes, that event alone. Like, what is a justice doing in that circumstance? And then we find out that it's probably more common than it should be, and certainly has been common in the conduct by Clarence Thomas. So I think the Supreme Court, the first thing they need to do, and I think they are taking some steps to do this, is to create their own ethical standards. The fact is they've operated without any written ethical standards to be measured against. Okay, that's license in right there, right? That's a license to have a broad ambit to what it is you can do, and it needs to be constrained. Hopefully, Justice Roberts will guide them in the direction of having a set of ethical standards that can withstand review by the public and say, yeah, this is a fair and right ethical standards to hold these people against.
So you're suggesting that
and then have public reporting.
Are you suggesting that they write their own standards?
Well, sure. I'm not sure that people can't write their own ethical standards.
That's kind of like,
I think it's okay if they write them so long as they're public and they can be perused and to be understood to be fair by third party observers.
That's kind of like saying to Congress, hey, we want you guys to pass term limitations.
Well,
ain't going to happen.
I think it is going to happen with the Supreme Court, because I think Roberts recognizes that otherwise the Supreme Court will be held to standards by Congress, and that if they put themselves under the thumb of Congress, they will be subjugating the court to the congressional controls in a way that would be contrary to the interests of the Constitution. And hopefully the court itself respects the Constitution and the principles enough to impose on themselves reasonable standards. I'm confident the reasonable standards won't be awfully puritanical. It might give them some latitude.
All right. That's Sandy Williams. Sandy, we'll see you again on next Tuesday. Enjoy the weather. Calvin, enjoy the weather. Thank you for a great week as always, Calvin. Up next, Jane Matinere. Matinere on Air and Greg Bach. Enjoy the weather. Let it shine for you.
Our dial position is off to the right. Our conversation, right in the middle. You're soaring with Eagle 1490,
the talk of lacrosse.
Friday on Nightlight, I'm joined by Emerson Lehman, Rob Thomas, and Terry Barr. It's Nightlight with Pete Schwabe from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Todd and his regular guest, Trigvi Olson, were out and about with a simple theme. What makes Wisconsin great? For all the divisive topics and politics that we have on his show and on my show, we're doing that because we love living here. And we want to talk about the things that make Wisconsin great. And we did that over cheese curds and cold beer last night. Ooh. And I really appreciate Todd doing that.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Soaring high above lacrosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The House is now debating and is expected to vote soon on reauthorizing funds.